that would be the way it should go.
I don't think they'll ever give that up willingly. Mohammed, what's your take on it? I think they'll fight tooth and nail on every shekel that they have to give over.
Well, now, you know, if we look at history, we see, sadly, and James, we see, sadly, that they fought tooth and nail to get into this position. So I'm inclined to agree with what you say, Dal. I don't think they'll let go of it easily. Also, you've got this corruption in the theology which crept in that according to the New Testament had arisen then, and that Jesus himself, peace be upon him and his mother, were criticizing them for this idea of trying to set themselves apart from the rest of the creatures in this world by claiming that they were of some kind of higher order. That, of course, is born of arrogance, born of pride. It's the very definition of it is pride. You know, I'm better than him for this reason or that reason, whatever the delusion is. And that pride always, fortunately, leads to a fall. So I think pride will be their undoing, this foolish theology. I think that the rest of mankind, you know, it wouldn't be so bad, Dal. I've said this to you before. I don't mind people believing they're superior. I really don't have a problem with that. If they want to believe that, fine. But it's the imposition of that belief into society. I am better, therefore, you're going to be treated as second-class citizens in the world. You're not going to get a slice of the economic pie. I'm going to come to Africa and steal all your natural resources for pieces of fake money. But all these kinds of attitude of the implementation of it, it's one thing to believe it. It's another thing to live it. And that, for me, is the serious, serious problem. And I don't, having tasted the life, I think it's very hard for them to give that up.
Well, I think you're right about that. And, James, you know, one of the reasons I brought you on tonight after, you know, looking over your extensive resume, you've got a lifelong work history of forward planning, and
sure.
Meaning that you've always tried to be a good judge of what's coming next and how it can best be implemented to benefit the societies that you've examined. What I see, in sadly, is with these people in charge, and they sadly are in charge at the moment, our future and our future planning is not looking very very stable, not for food, not for medicine, not for travel, not for freedom of our own information and privacy, not for our right to protect ourselves from attack.
Mm-hmm.
There's nary an area that we have not lost almost all of our rights. What do you see as a forward planner, and how are we going to fight back against this absolute illness that's being meted out right now?
Well, I think one of the things we need to do is just what you've done, which is to outline the scenarios that are going to unfold if we do nothing, if we take action which is counterproductive, or if we go along with them and encourage them to do what they're doing to the Palestinians and possibly other countries. There's those three scenarios that need to be spelled out. And then on the positive side, we need to spell out the scenarios of a better world and then work back from those what it means in terms of forward planning, what we've got to do to reinstate the sort of development which we all thought the world was naturally pursuing. In other words, we've got to, as I said earlier, take legal action against the criminals. It's no good lying down and saying, oh, well, they're a bit too powerful. We can't take them to court. In fact, there are groups all over the world, in Spain, in Malaya, in Iran, in Palestine itself, and even in America and in Britain, who are trying to take legal action to arrest the criminals who are committing the very worst crimes against humanity and even genocide against the Palestinians. That will be a very important start, because it will put the future path on its... It'll put the future on a path that's just, rather than one that's just based on hope. I think it's possible because, as I said, most of the world is behind us in theory, and I think when it comes to the crunch, everybody has got to be on the side of taking criminals to court and making sure that they're put behind bars and can't do any more damage. That will then make their supporters and their public, as it were, resile from supporting them. And
well, but James, I want to bring something up that's happening now that I believe is on our horizon, and it's on our immediate horizon. They've worked feverishly to develop bioweapons over the last 100 yeah. years, and the proof of that comes from the Rockefeller Institute and its control under the Jewish Zionist hands. People like Flexner and people like Salk and people like Sabin and people like that run the Scripps Institute and so forth, and Fort Detrick and Porterdown mm-hmm. and the rest. Now, what I'm saying to you is that we have they in development, and it's going to be probably released sometime in the not so far off future here. A new illness, a new worldwide pandemic, and they've already tried to get this stuff into their vaccines. Recently, Baxter Company sent out live bird flu virus mixed with live flu virus from another strain of flu that was destined to be mixed together and to come a super flu, not meaning super flu in French, by the way. My whole idea here is that executives around the world and some Japanese executives have already blown the whistle on it, are bringing home their executives in advance of September because they've been told that there is going to be a pandemic released on the world. And it's these same people doing it. And this is the kind of evil that these people are willing to unleash. And it's like one step away from a world war nuclear option is this bird flu option. And it looks like it's on our horizon. And I'm sick to my stomach thinking about it. And I've got a lot of evidence to prove what I just said, James. Mohammed, I want to bring you in on this. What is your take on what I just said?
Well, you know, this, again, I think is rooted in this theology. I agree with the analysis that James is putting forward as the optimum way of examining the options, but we have to make sure that factoring in is this idea in this theology whereby they don't have a problem looking on the rest of us like cattle, like chickens, giving a bird flu virus to the Chinese population, to them is the same as injecting it in a pigeon or something. You know, we must be able to get everything back onto the reasoning of humanity. And what James is positing is the idea that we need to, as human beings, to reason. And I think what you're raising here, Daryl, is that they're not thinking like the rest of us.
No, they're thinking like psychopaths.
Factor that in.
No, they're thinking like psychopaths, Mohammed. And when you're dealing with a psychopath, this is somebody fundamentally deluded. I mean, the very definition of a psychopath is somebody who is willing to take actions in a way that are based upon delusion. And of course,
and they have no empathy with other human beings. Psychopathic behavior is where people lose empathy, lose sympathy of the human being. Again, that was, if you like, in the parable of the Good Samaritan, this idea that you could walk past an injured man and not want to help him. And it was highlighted as shall we say, unreligious behavior to start with, but in modern terms we would say that would also be psychopathic. You know, the milk of human kindness should want us to do these things, but we're measuring people by our own yardsticks. And I think you're raising an important point here, Daryl, which is that, you know, we have to factor into any way forward how we can also avoid returning to this situation.
Well, again, I'm going to bring this over to James now. James, you know, many people believe that run capitalism caused this, and I have to say that that this world has never lived under capitalism. We've lived under a name called capitalism, but true capitalism, where people bring good ideas to people who are willing to risk building those good ideas for the benefit of it, and then providing that benefit in a marketplace, this is a good system, but we've never had that. What we've got here is somebody calling a system of monopoly and oligarchy, we're calling that capitalism. And so everybody out there saying, oh, we shouldn't be for capitalism, we should be. In other words, they've sickened even the best ideas humans have come up with as systems. We're in a situation right now where we don't even have a good definition of terms.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I think you're right. I think confusion is part of their strategy. If you can't win honestly, you can always confuse your opposition by changing the definitions or saying you're doing one thing when you're actually doing something else. This comes back to Rothschild, who says he's rooting for Britain when in fact he was rooting for Israel, says he's looking at scientific achievement from the point of view of improving it, when in fact he's giving it away to somebody else. One has to root out this kind of deception. That's another characteristic. After all, it's the motto of Mossad, "By deception thou shalt kill." That's got to be exposed and rooted out. It's not something that the world community should permit.
Are we going to be able to mount, because I don't think that the top echelon of this group is going to ever give up willingly. There's going to have to be at some point a willingness for the world to take them out of their game. Now, that doesn't mean the rank-and-file Jews here, because I've brought this up thousands of times in my program. I'm not against the Jews per se, and most Jews in the world are down at the lowest level of the Jewish community, and they don't have free reign of the world like the Rothschilds or the Oppenheimers or the Brothmans or the Levies or the Goldmans. What I'm saying to you is that, but these people have bought the lie. They have bought the lie, like the Zionist Christians in the United States. They've bought the lie. And what I'm saying to you is that the top echelon of these groups have to be removed. I mean, by all means necessary.
Yeah.
How else are we going to get them out?
Well, as I say, I favor the legal route. It's legal, it's possible, it's difficult, and it's expensive, and it might go wrong, but that's the proper way to try first. Unfortunately, it doesn't seem to have been tried very often. Even when this chap I was talking about, Zalman Shapiro, was shipping nuclear stuff to Israel, apparently five U.S. presidents covered it up rather than take legal action. So it's difficult. But that's the way we should go. And I think with the majority of the world community on our side, we can use the international courts and the International Criminal Court and the United Nations General Assembly to impugn these people and finally get them arrested and put away. And I think the rest will follow. Once you get the chiefs locked up, everybody else is going to walk away from the plot.
I would hope that that's possible. What I've tried to do on this show, Mohammed, is identify the chiefs, and it's a large list. And if you're involved in media, it's a huge list. If you're involved in finance, it's a huge list. If you're involved in science, and if you're involved in genetic modifying foods, it's a long list. If it's the new technologies of oligo systems or Infosys systems or even security systems that are guarding. Did you know, James, that the nuclear arsenal of America is now guarded by an Israeli company?
Yes, I did. It's very odd, isn't it? The whole principle of the Constitution has been completely turned on its head, whereby the very security of the country and the rights of its people are actually being eroded by a foreign interest, the very thing that was written into the Constitution to protect against. The reason why they threw Britain out.
and we've let the parasite back in, and the parasite is now killing the body.
That's right.
Well, guys, I brought you both on because both of you are very learned men. Both of you have the knowledge and the skills to present this stuff in a way that I think the listening public can understand, and it's thought-provoking. Are there other issues that you wanted to bring up, James, about this conspiracy that we haven't touched upon in this conversation?
Well, I think there are a lot of issues I'd like to discuss around this, partly on the history and partly on what's happening now in Gaza and the threat to Iran. I mean, coming back to the Rothschilds and the nuclear issue, the hypocrisy and the illegality of arming Israel to the teeth with nuclear weapons and then imposing sanctions on Iran for trying to build a civil nuclear reactor. Even if they were trying to build weapons, it would be perfectly understandable as a defensive mechanism, because Iran is one of the few countries brave enough to come to the physical defense of the Palestinians, and therefore they've put themselves in the crosshairs of the Israeli military. So in the pursuit of justice, a whole country is now suffering human rights abuses and from the Israeli-inspired embargoes imposed by America on its finances and some of its trade and its nuclear activities, so that it cannot defend itself and its brothers from this evil force in the world. So that's another issue I'd like to bring up. And a third one, looking more towards the future, is the whole problem of where do you go next if the world superpower is on its knees and has already been taken over by this power. You've got to look to the next power, and the fear there is that they will do the same thing again. The next power is obviously going to be China, or maybe a mixture of China, India, and other countries. But even if it was all of them, 100 or so of them, it wouldn't be beyond the possibility that the same people would be infiltrating those administrations and saying...
They already have in India. They already have, James, in India.
Yes, that's right. I mean, they're already shipping secrets, nuclear secrets, across to India and helping them with their debacle with Pakistan and stirring up trouble in Colombia.
Yes.
So, yes, you're quite right. So, unfortunately, the rosy scenario that I was trying to paint earlier has got a very small chance of becoming the most likely one. I think we must continue to look positively at the possibilities. We don't want to be getting into physical attacks, but if they do, I think it's possibly justified.
Well, yeah, you're right. I mean, we can't be victims. And Muhammad, you've said this before. It is not within Islam's teachings to stand there and be victimized. And that the Muslim community has not only a right but a duty to stand up to someone who is victimizing them. And isn't that the religious stand that Islam takes against being victimized?
Oh, absolutely. It is a self-defense, is a religious obligation. And to not defend yourself as a Muslim is actually a sin. It's counted as a sin. Just raising the points that you were brought again, Daryl, and James did together there, what you're effectively saying, and as an analysis, is in reality, when we look at the history of these people, they are parasitic in nature. And once the United States ceases to be a use to them, once it's lost its credibility in the world through actually undertaking policies on behalf of them, and they've ruined their credibility, they will be seeking new hosts whereby to exercise influence. And of course, we can see that they've been doing that for centuries. Again, I would posit, James, that we need to think that if this is how they are thinking, any future models for any government in the future need to be based upon the idea of proper checks and balances it should not be possible for a president of the United States to not enforce the law. We need a system whereby it's automatic.
But the Constitution did guarantee that, and they ignored it. And the American people became so malaised and so unattentive to their own freedoms that they allowed the crimes to be committed wanton and wholesale. And the fact is now it's too late to revert back to the document at this point. The gig is up for America. We've lost the plot. And yet that document, that Constitution, if either of you men have read it, guaranteed the very thing you're saying, Muhammad, and we allowed it to become a worthless piece of paper, as George Bush said it should be. The fact is that we didn't stand up for the rights and freedoms, and they even identified the Zionist Jews in their earlier manifestations in the document. Every single leader of America who formed that Constitution specifically singled out this group.
Yes. And the problem is, Darrell, that although the Constitution is a very important and a helpful document, as a document, unless it's enforced, it is, as Bush says, useless. So it is unimportant. Therefore, we need to think in forward planning in terms about how that enforcement could be done, irrespective of the government, maybe some independent body that's truly independent, that has the responsibility of measuring and enforcing that, irrespective of day-to-day government.
Mm. Well, it seems to me anytime you allow this particular group access to large sums of capital, money, or influence, they use it for ill. And they use it for crime, and they use it for usury, and they use it for injury. And that seems to be a historical perspective that is undeniable. Now, what short of eliminating their access to those to the idea of ever having capital or ever having riches or wealth in their future? Because they can't seem to stop when it comes to wealth. They want more, and they want more power. And it's happened from the beginning of written time till now.
Mm.
And it's never abated. And I don't know how else to describe it, but it's just a criminal need to abuse others around them by thinking they're better. And it's just a constant throughout history. And that's a horrible thing to think. It sounds like a racist statement, but I'm talking historic here. It's not. I can prove that. I mean, this is a horrible thing to say about a group of people, but it's true.
Palestine at the moment. You don't need to go very far back in history to prove your point. The evidence is on the ground. They've fooled the international community into withdrawing aid from people who need it more than anyone else. They've fooled us into stopping them having defences to the people who need it more than anyone else. They've, as I said, accused other countries like Iran and Iraq falsely of building nuclear weapons when they've already got 400 illegal ones. They turn everything round. They accuse the Palestinians of being terrorists when they haven't got any other means of resisting the onslaught. When in fact, of course, it's the Israeli state both born of terrorism and actively carrying out terrorism against, first of all, the Palestinians and then any country that comes to their aid. All these things add up to a very sorry a picture of a country or a nation that's prepared to twist the truth in order to get its own way. And its own way is not particularly honourable either, because what they're doing in Palestine is taking other people's land and abusing it. They're wasting the water. There's precious water, little water in the Jordan Valley. A third of it goes into cooling the nuclear plant at Dimona. A lot of it just goes into the desert. So that they can get grants from the European community for turning the desert into useful product, which very often doesn't happen. So all these things add up to a rather sorry human picture. And I think you can then add on the crimes that I've just mentioned of genocide against the Palestinians. That's the deliberate killing of any member of a national, religious, or ethnic group, which is clearly done in Gaza recently and in other times, all over Palestine and in Lebanon. They've committed crimes of imprisoning people without charge, of shooting children in order to kill them, shooting at women, depriving them of their freedoms to move about in their own country.
Rachel Corrie, people that came to their aid to speak for them were murdered.
Exactly. They call it assassination when they murder people like Sheikh Rantizi, a blind paraplegic who was the leader of Hamas before they became elected, and Sheikh Yassin, and Dr. Rantizi. These were actually this is political murder. And this all underpins your point that this is a criminal entity, and the reaction of the international community should be to take these crimes to court, so that at least we can hear the defence if they've got one, and we can impugn the culprits. As I say, I think. One mustn't tar the entire Jewish community with the sins of their elders.
Certainly don't.
Probably.
I agree with that, and I think through education, the lowest rung of the ladder of the Jewish community can become aware of the crimes of the people above them and act against these people. I've always told Muhammad in our conversations that the best way to dismantle this group is by having the Jews themselves abandon them. And that is an education that needs to be done. Muhammad, you want to speak to that?
Well, of course, Darryl. You know, we see from the writings of members of Netare Carter again that the Zionists have confused the majority of the Jewish community into following them and their doctrines, and obviously then getting them into paranoid states, fearing that, you know, if they don't live under the Israeli state, who else will defend them, or whatever it is, the head games that they've employed on the very people they claim to be trying to defend, in order to get them to do their bidding. I mean, one of the things is that although Mossad and Haganah were relatively small groups, when you bring in the numbers of Sayanim, you know, the number of helpers to the organization worldwide, you quickly get to 1 million, and that's a lot of people.
Yep, yep. Especially a lot of people who have a voracious appetite for any action that they need to take, and it's often political assassination, or it's often using pedophilia to hold somebody in control, or extortion of some sort, or drug money, or I mean, there's so many things these people are involved in. They have their hands in. I mean, the cocaine trade is in their hands. It's astonishing, guys. You know, we've spent almost an hour and 40 minutes on this subject, and it's gone by very quickly. James, do you have any closing statements for our listeners here? It's been a wonderful time with you, and I want to give you an opportunity to maybe make a closing statement here.
Well, I think just building on what Muhammad has just said, there are people in the Jewish community who do stand up to what the Israelis are doing. In fact, there's a solicitor called Daniel Makover who's tried, nearly succeeded in getting an Israeli general arrested at Heathrow. He failed because the Metropolitan Police here in London were a little bit slow in getting onto the plane that he'd arrived in Israel on and arresting him, and they were probably a little bit frightened that he might fight back. But apart from that, it was a good attempt, and it hasn't stopped him trying again. And he's actually getting further than I have done. I think partly because of his contacts, and of course he is actually a lawyer, whereas I'm a planner. So I think from that point of view, there is hope that there are a few good enough people in the Jewish community, and of course there are quite a lot in the academic side, people like Israel Shamir, and well, he's dead now, but Israel Shahak. People like that who came out and gave the red light to what they were doing, and so the rest of us. Those people are to be revered. And by the same token, I think I would reinforce my call that everyone who's got the guts, the time, and the money to do so should observe the Geneva Conventions, which say that once you know that a crime has been committed, either a war crime or a crime against humanity or genocide, you have a duty, your government has a duty, but if the government won't act, everybody has a duty to bring that crime to court, or at least to lay information about it. And I think if enough people did that, it's a growing body, I think we'd be well on the way to getting this whole sorry saga allayed and put to rest by legal means rather than military.
Well, that's a great hope, Doctor.
It's a hope.
I hold with that hope as well. Mohammed, do you have anything to share with our listeners before we call it a program?
Well, certainly people need to become active. And I usually do finish on this one, Dale, which is all that is necessary for the triumph of evil is that good men and women do nothing. It is necessary for people to get out there in some capacity or other to spread the message, to turn people into looking at the facts. And if it's a bit of a struggle and you even get into arguments, so be it. You've got to put the facts before people and not fear their response.
I agree with that, Mohammed. I want to thank you both for coming on. It's been an extraordinary couple of hours for me. This is a wearing job that I have on trying to present this information week after week. And I got to tell you, it's going on for years now, Mohammed. You know that I've been battling this stuff alongside you for a very long time. It is my sincerest wish that the people that are listening to this broadcast can bring others to this information. This is the job that you have, because we can win this through education, because they can't stop a tidal wave of knowledge. And that tidal wave has really begun. French Connection from 200 up to 2 million. Come on, we can do this. It should be 20 million and 200 million and billions, and we can do it. So share this information, share this knowledge, and bring people to the French Connection's information and others who are speaking the truth as well. Thank you, James Thring and Mohammed Rafiq, for coming on today.
Well, congratulations to you, Daryl, for hosting this kind of oxygen debate and having the guts to carry it on week after week. I think you should be getting a Legion d'honneur, if there was such a thing for world activity like this.
Thank you, sir. And thanks, Mohammed.
You're welcome, Daryl. Thank you for your
time. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the French Connections brought for this. This day, and it's been a long one for me. I the battle is still raging, and this, we need your help more than ever before. So please pull out all stops and get involved. Share this with people in India and Pakistan and Iran. Share this around the world. Go to IamTheWitness.com to hear this file, this broadcast replayed. Until the next time, ladies and gentlemen, this is Daryl Bradford Smith telling you all, please be well.